Back now to my guests, both in Las Vegas, Dr. John Alexander and Colonel Philip J. Corso. Now that you have come forward, Colonel, with this incredible information, surely there are others, other than General Trudeau, who has now passed on, who could confirm what you're saying.
Lately, I had four officers come up to me in uniform.
In uniform?
Officers.
And?
They confirmed, two colonels confirmed to me that this was true. They knew about it. And a lieutenant colonel came, and the test pilot from B-2 came up to me in uniform.
In uniform?
Yeah, I don't want to say where it was because I don't want anybody looking into it. And they verified this to me just 10 days ago.
They're not prepared to come forward, though.
No, and I did get a letter from, and I don't think he's, if I tell his name, he's McDonald's son, a scientist. And he confirmed to me in a letter he wrote to me before I left home, when he sent me a religious letter, he talked to people. He was on the Jason Committee. And he said that Hughes, North American, and Wright Pat, people who are confirmed, that finally they said he filled in some of the holes that we wondered about all our lives.
John,
he just came to me in a letter a few days ago.
John Alexander, right. Dr. Alexander, with what resources you've had, what aspects of this have you been able to confirm?
Well, what I can confirm is, revolves around Phil's background.
All right.
That, as we mentioned earlier, he had come forward twice. We actually only mentioned one of the incidents. One, you know, kind of the secret war that was going on. The other was a POW exploitation program that the KGB had run for 50 years. And that came out last year. And so he has twice told very unusual tales and turned out to be true. When I have talked to folks who, as I said, knew him, they state they cannot confirm the details of this, but state we should not disregard him.
Mm-hmm. Colonel, can you confirm that reverse engineering was going on at either Area 51 or Area S4, those areas out here in our Nevada desert that you are now very close to?
Well, from information I had, yes, it was going on. But I don't have the details and never bothered to try to get them because I figured that was a sister service. They're military. In fact, General Trudeau went up in front of Congress, and he was testifying, and he recommended and stunned everybody that instead of turn it over to NASA to turn everything in space over to the Air Force. And people were stunned when he said that. And he actually said this in front of the Senate committee. So we didn't bother with them. They were doing their own work. We trusted them and we let them alone. And we figured it's best that we stay where we are to ourselves.
All right, to this day, how compartmentalized do you believe it is? For example, do you think the president and our current National Security Council are now in the loop, or is all of this still off to the side and a government in effect within a government that that harbors this information?
Well, the government, you know, when you talk about the government, Art, it's a huge organization.
Of course.
And I've said in some of my interviews, leave the government alone, it'll cover itself up. You know, and that's true, that's what happened. That happened on my POW reports, missing POWs I sent from Japan. Kissinger, even, and Scowcroft said they didn't, those reports didn't exist, yet they were there. We found them later. They just, people didn't want to do anything with them. When you touch UFOs, people run and hide for some reason.
I know.
And I guess it's still going on. Because I've been attacked, minor attacks, so nothing of any consequence. And even Whitney Sabre, you know, the man who wrote Communion?
Yes.
He told me, he said, Phil, he said, some of the, at Roswell, he said this. He said, Phil, some of the attacks are, we're treading on their territory.
Oh, that's right. That's how you know you begin to get attacked. Do you believe, Colonel, that foreign technology, the Foreign Technology Division, may still be involved in seeding this technology into industry? Because we didn't figure it all out back then.
I can't say. I'm not clear anymore, and I haven't been in contact for a while. Other people tell me, like these people in uniform just told me a week ago is still going on. So I hope it is, because it's important enough to keep on going. And I think some of these developments, I surprised my son one day because we build airplanes, these Rutan-type airplanes, and a B-2 came over an air show, and I told him what to do, and he called me. He said, oh, no, it can't. Then he called me up, and he said, it came over and it flew like a little airplane. It held near impossible for a big airplane like that. That means some of the developments are going into that craft. It has to be.
Say, Art?
Yes, John.
FTD, and again, this was an Army, small Army organization, not the one at Wright-Patterson with the Air Force. One of the things I was able to confirm is that when Phil came to the Pentagon, this unit was created, and right after he left, it disappears. If you follow what I did is go through the phone books for that period in the Pentagon.
So you were able to confirm that division at that time?
At that time, and then it disappears as he retires. And right after Trudeau left, because remember, he was working directly for Trudeau. And right after, a few months after General Trudeau retired, that's when Phil Corso retired.
Yeah, I retired 6 months after he did.
6 months.
Like General Beach, he gave me my last decoration, the Army Commendation Medal, for what I did with General Trudeau. But I still stayed in touch with General Trudeau.
And 3 years ago he died, releasing you from your vows to him.
Yes.
And then what made you decide, Colonel, to write this book? I mean, you...
Well, one of the reasons I decided to write it, my grandchildren, the three little boys, asked me one day, what did you do during the war, Granddad?
Hmm.
So I figured I'd better leave him a legacy and put it on paper, because really, I never had any intention of writing a book, you know. That wasn't my area at all. And I started to write. And I put it all down, including my tie-in experiences and even other investigations that I did in the government. I started to put those on paper. I figured at least I'll leave them for the little boy, a legacy for the little boys. And from there it evolved into this book, which I never expected to see that.
Colonel, if you had not written this book, you're 82, you're not going to be around forever. None of us will. Would we eventually, in your view, know about all of this? Would there be anybody to come forward, or would eventually all those who can tell the story you're now telling?
Well, I think that most of them are gone, really, now. Remember, most of the people that were working with me were my age. They all had been honed in combat, and that's how we were able to keep a secret. There was a certain affinity between us. And I think that they're mostly all gone because a good percentage of them are older than I was. In fact, in the testimony, when I testified in front of Congress on missing persons, well, I told because the families were sitting there, I said that when I met the boys, Pamela and John coming across, they were younger than me, maybe, and I'm 82 and I'm still here, maybe some of them are still alive. Of course, it was a long shot, but at least it was some hope for the families.
Sure. At one time, Barry Goldwater asked General LeMay about seeing the secret room, some secret room at Wright-Patt Air Force Base.
Yeah.
LeMay told Goldwater, actually cussed at him and said, never ask me about it again.
Yeah, that's right.
Was Goldwater unknowingly referring to your room?
No, he was referring to Wright-Patterson.
Wright-Patterson, where those bodies went and where you presume...
I knew Goldwater. I used to go up his office and talk to him.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I notified him when his private line had been tapped by CIA.
Did he ever ask you about this
technology? No, he never did. He didn't know I was involved. And I never told him. The only one that knew, really, on Capitol Hill was Thurman knew. And Senator Bridges, Senator Eastland knew. But those were the only two. And McCormick knew. I forgot about McCormick. I was great friends with John McCormick, the Speaker of the House. He knew also.
He knew.
Because I went up to MIT with him and gave a lecture. The speaker was a grand old man, and he was a good friend of mine. We got along real fine. So he knew. I told him about it.
One wonders, and it is reasonable to ask, Colonel, why you are the only one who has come forward this publicly with this information. It's incredible.
I don't know. Maybe I don't know any better. I don't know.
Colonel Corso, what you have said, what you're saying in your book and here on the air, is so incredible. So fantastic that you would have to imagine that there would be elements within the government and out of it that are aware of your information, and there must be some kind of battle going on between the people who know about whether it should become public or not. I mean, this affects all of our recent history, Colonel. Is there a battle going on? Will there be others? Are you the last? What do you think?
No, I've had calls from some of them. They'll come forward in time, but I can't expose their names without their permission. Now, also another thing, Art, I really don't think that this is going to cause any panic or anything, because I think from what I saw at Roswell when the families brought their children up to meet me, they're accepting this. They wanted to know, and they're accepting it, and they're going to go right along with it and live with it. I don't think there's going to be any great explosion or any panic. I think they're accepting it as a thing of the future, and I think it'll end up that way. And that's the way I hope it ends up. This is part of history. It's written now. The young ones accept it, and mostly I want the young ones to accept it because we won't be here that long, but they will still be around. And I think that's what's going to happen to the book. It's going to be accepted. It's what they wanted to hear.
Hey, Art?
Yes, Jim.
Can I interject kind of an administrative thing? We haven't had a chance to talk. I might mention, you know, Isaac said that Phil is high energy, and I think we can see that, but he's now in 17 hours today.
I understand.
So, but that might structure the kinds of questions you want to answer in this segment.
All right. There's news breaking tonight. This may seem funny, but it's not. They have constructed the world's tiniest guitar. It's about the size of a single blood cell, 20 times thinner than a human hair. It has 6 strings that can be plucked, but they are actually too small to be heard. Is this kind of... Actually, scientists at Cornell University carved the guitar out of crystalline silicon to demonstrate the possibilities of building devices at the microscopic level. Could this be technology derived from this same group of artifacts, Colonel?
It could be, because some of the things in there make a little sense, you know, that you just said. And the first transistor I saw was almost out with microscopic little wires in it that came from the flying saucer.
What happened to all of those materials, the ones that were not turned over to industry? What happened to those materials?
I really don't know. I left my files there with all my papers when I retired, because after all, it belonged to the Army, and it wasn't mine.
You were a good soldier. You didn't take anything you're not supposed to take.
I was supposed to be the man who would stop people from taking things like that.
Yeah.
I was one of those, and I couldn't betray the trust that the general had in me. You know. And also, I never had any intention of writing any books or doing anything like this. It never entered my head in those days.
Well, how did you come then to write the book?
Well,
I mean, did you struggle with it? Did you?
No, not so much. When I decided to do it after the general died, and the children, my grandchildren, asked me what I did during the war, I not only wrote this, but I wrote my experiences in Italy. You know, like I said, and I wrote about other investigations that I worked on. And I wrote all this as a legacy for the children, for my grandchildren.
Yes.
And then this book here, that's now it started to develop from those writings. I figured I might as well discuss this, too. General Trudeau's been involved, you see. So I started to put it on paper, and when I got it all done, it was actually Simon Schuster already asked me if I'm interested in getting my notes that this book was taken from published, because the notes is a different type of people, you know. We'll be looking at that, and not people that want to hear the story.
All right, Colonel, I asked you this on Dreamland, but I think it has to be asked again. On Dateline, I think it was Dateline, at the very end of the interview, you said something that people used to discredit your story. You said you would tell them sometime about a time machine, or something about a time machine.
Yeah.
Can you clear that up?
Well, I discussed that with Hermann Oberth, the German. I think it's in the book. And that in time, I think, will be clarified, because there's other countries that are working on things of that type. But at the moment, I think I'll just leave it the way it is in the book, that those were discussions with Hermann Oberth at the time.
All right. If you had items from a crashed UFO in your office, did you at any time consider the possibility that there was potential danger, radiation, whatever else, on handling these materials?
Well, we considered that on the chip and the integrated circuit, like I told you, that we might be leasing something on the world which we didn't understand. You see, Art, I tell a lot of people, don't think that we were so intelligent that we knew what we were doing all the time. We didn't know what these things would do and how they would end up. Even fiber optics, we never knew how that would work. We didn't even know if it was wires at the time.
Yes, sir.
But gradually it evolved and developed.
All right. If our military, since 1947, has had the only physical evidence, or at least some physical evidence, of the existence of alien ET spacecraft, which would be considered certainly a reasonable threat to national security, why has the military shown no interest in civilian UFO reports?
Well, there's another thing, Harvard. You'd have to split the military up. Which part of the military doesn't want to see it, and which part does want to see it?
That's a good point.
Because we were the opinion, we were the military, we wanted it out, and we gave it out. Some of the Air Force people the same way. Other factions in there don't want to put it out because they're afraid of being labeled kooks and so forth. But I think that gradually some of the new developments I've seen, I think, refer back. Now, that wing, that B-2 flies, there must be something on anti-gravity in there that I know about. But I'm not sure of that because I haven't seen it myself, see. And I never bothered. If it's classified, I'm not cleared any longer. I can't go and find out about it. But sometimes I hear from friends of mine, you know.
When you were given this file cabinet, how long did it take for you to realize what you had on your hands?
Oh, I'd say that I gave General Trudeau the entire plan within a couple of months to start developing, how we should start developing. And then gradually, as I looked at the things and conferred with scientists and other people, I began to see which courses to take. And I'd recommend those to the general, and then the decision would be made. Of course, the general made all these final decisions. See, I didn't.
What is it like for you now, Colonel? Are you getting a lot of criticism?
No, very little criticism.
Very little.
In fact, already some of my debunkers and skeptics have come up to shake hands with me. So there is very little criticism. In fact, I'll tell you, I had some misgivings on how I received out there. People meet me in restaurants at the airport.
Right.
Because I'd never lived this type of life. I've always been sort of in the shadows, you know.
Sure.
And I had misgivings. In fact, I made the statement out there a few times, and Michael Letterman caught this when I told him. I told him, you know, when I see all this, I figure, what am I doing here? I should be holding my easy chair. Because really, never been in this arena before. But now I'm thrown in it, and I guess I've got to make the best of it.
To your knowledge, since those early crashes and retrievals and the technology and the bodies and all the rest of it, in the years between then and now, do you have any knowledge of additional crashes?
Yes, I had knowledge of that.
Oh?
The Germans confirmed it. Wilbur Smith, a great Canadian genius, confirmed it to me in person, right in the Pentagon. He came to visit us. I had a good session with him. Then the general came back from his meeting, and he told Wilbur Smith, he said, you and the colonel have a lot to talk about. I'm going to send him up to your laboratory. I was supposed to go up to Mayborough, his laboratory in Lake Ontario area. Of course, I put it off. And when they did call to go up there, they told me Wilbur Smith in 1962, when I was going up, he had died of cancer. So that was a great loss. And the general got a hold, and I told the general that, he said, sit right down at the table, and you write down everything that you discuss with Mr. Smith, because he's gone now.
Well, Colonel, you're getting up in age, 82. There are no doubt contemporaries of yours out there, probably around the same age. A lot of them may be listening to you right now. What do you want them to do?
Well, at the right time, let them come out, because this information should be told to the younger people. And I'd like to see them come out and do like I did. Tell the young people this. They're the ones who are going to be around. We won't be around here. But let them know what you know. And I think, and I know some of these men, if they're still alive, I think they will do it. They were tough men. They were good men.
Back down to my guests. Dr. Alexander, I've asked many questions, and if there are any critical questions that you would like to ask the colonel, you should.
Well, of course, I've had
quite a bit of time to do that.
Yes, you have.
Before we checked him out, I guess a couple of things I would say. You know, one of the questions that comes up is this guy crazy? And we frankly, I don't know if he knows this, but had somebody qualified to do that, interact with him, and came back and said, you know, we may not agree with him, but he's not crazy.
Sometimes I question that myself, John. when I look back at these things, I have to question that.
Your information is so very serious that I would imagine a congressional committee or a Senate hearing would like to sit you down and make this public. If you were summoned to Washington to tell this story, to get it out in a public forum, would you go?
I've appeared in front of 6 congressional committees.
Public?
And I have nothing to hide if they're serious in what they want to do.
Public, Colonel? Public?
Yeah, they were public. No, one wasn't. The one that that 1962 was still classified top secret. That's the one I discussed with Attorney General Robert Kennedy. And no, that's still secret, but the others are unclassified. You see, congressional committees a lot of times are not serious what they're doing. It's done for publicity. And I know I was on Capitol Hill. If it's publicity, I won't do it. If it's to inform the people, yes, I'll be glad to go in front of a congressional committee.
Dr. Alexander, do you think there's any likelihood that in light of this information becoming so public, such a hearing might be held?
I would not be terribly hopeful, frankly. And I've been checking some sources. I know a number of people on the Hill and staffers and people who work it. Face it, the political downside for a politician to get actively involved is much higher than the benefits to be gained as long as the media reports these things the way they do.
Well, that might be true, certainly, of UFO reports or people asking questions about lights over Phoenix or all the rest of it. But when you've got somebody the stature of Colonel Corso, with what he has said and where we confirm he has been, saying the things he's saying, it seems to me it demands an investigation, and that any senator or congressman could not be too heavily criticized for wanting to hear from Colonel Corso.
Well, here's the thing, Art, I can explain. My last testimony was in front of Congressman Dornan's committee on the missing prisoners of war.
Right.
They had a Czech general there, and the Czech general had been, his life had been threatened 3 times because he said these experiments come. And so Dornan asked me if I would appear and run interference for the general, appear before him and sit alongside of him, because I would add credibility to the general they were trying to smear, because he was Czechoslovakian.
Yes.
And the man told a true story. And I confirmed what he said. It was true because I knew about those hospitals. I knew about those experiments. Now, it took a man like Dornan who had the nerve to get up there and hold a committee. And the families were there that day, too. They were waiting for me outside in the hallway when I came.
Yeah, if there's one thing Dornan has, it's that kind of tenacity.
Yeah. And so it needs that kind of tenacity, and somebody that will take it in spite of criticism. Because it's very simple. A newspaper reporter will say, well, this congressman is getting into a kooky subject. All right, some people maybe in his area where he gets votes will believe that. So why should they take the chance? I wish they would. But I doubt it. I know enough on it.
Remember, Art, there's a huge political downside. While Phil says he has not had a lot of overt criticism, that's because the book, I think, is fairly new and people are not directly threatened. If you elevate this to congressional hearings, you're now a direct threat.
Well, that's what I was hoping for, John. Some sort of direct threat to a lie by omission. I mean, it's about time. If what the colonel says is true, then he's our best connection to what really has occurred. And here's an interesting question for you, Colonel. If all of the technology that was gleaned from Roswell and any other crashes that have occurred, alien technology, had not been interwoven with American industry, where would we be today?
Well, I'll give you a little example. I had a file in one of my files, it was in the second drawer, which was called Project Rainbow.
Yes, sir.
This was von Neumann's You remember John von Neumann?
Yes.
It was his project on artificial life. Now, I went through that file two or three times and I always put it away when I could have started an operation on that.
Artificial, when you say artificial life, what do you mean?
By computer. They're starting to work on that now.
You're talking about artificial intelligence.
Artificial intelligence, that's right.
You bet they're working
on it. Artificial intelligence, the wrong word I gave you. Now, von Neumann, I didn't start that project. And a lot of people told me, well, it wasn't time because there were no supercomputers then. Now they can work on that, and they're working on it, artificial intelligence, because a supercomputer is available now, which wasn't available back then. So I think this is some of the developments that are coming up out of this, that new things can be taken, can be new developments may be taken from that craft. Maybe they can work in now what I said, that the being itself was part of the propulsion system, part of the UFO himself.
Well, that also is interesting because, Dr. Alexander, I'm sure you can confirm, we are beginning to work very seriously now on integration of pilots with our aircraft. They tell us, or I'm told, that there may come a time soon when a pilot will simply think commands for the aircraft. Is that ongoing research?
Well, Firefox is certainly ongoing. I think, however, the next step is to take the pilot out of the aircraft.
And have it be completely robotic.
Correct. What they're calling unmanned aerial vehicles or unmanned, unoccupied combat vehicles.
Well, that's really what the superintelligence did. They took what they were or their people out and put a robot or a humanoid in there.
Sounds more like a humanoid. In other words, half machine, half biological entity.
One day I was walking down the hall with General Trudeau, and I told him, General, I think that son of mine is a little bit crazy. He says the engines talk to him. The general stopped. He said, don't say that, Phil, because some people have certain relationships with engine and solid matter, which we don't understand yet. Now, this was actually General Trudeau's words to me when I approached him on that subject. So a racing driver, at times he says he feels like he's part of the racer, of the engine, of the car he's driving.
Right.
You see, these things we don't know too well yet. We haven't lived. And I think that in the book where I say that the UFO was an electromagnetic thing and the EB, or the extraterrestrial, was part of that aircraft, of that UFO.
An integral part of it.
He was a propulsion system, an integral part of it. This is what we're talking about now.
Do you think those bodies are still at Wright-Patterson?
No, because the lab said that they faded very fast. Their composition, I think, we didn't study it enough, really. We should have. And that was partially I blame myself for, because I could have carried that on, and I didn't do it.
In other words, the disposition of the bodies, that was in your hands, Colonel?
Well, I could have, at the time...
You could have followed up.
I could have followed it up and done something and made them study more with what they had before the things all deteriorated to the point where we couldn't work on them anymore or look at them.
The Air Force recently, of course, at the 50th anniversary of Roswell, or just prior to it, had a big news conference, and they disclaimed the whole thing once again. How did you react when you saw that, Colonel?
Well...
Sadness?
I can't conceive what they're thinking. I can't conceive why they're doing that. It's beyond me. And like I told Moshe Neumann, I wouldn't criticize the sister service. I follow them in Korea. I have a lot of friends in the Air Force, and I won't criticize them. And I told them, please, gentlemen, don't ask me to criticize. But their superiors, I can't even conceive or why they did something like this. And I made the statement, if I'd have done something like that, I think General Trudeau would have thrown me out of the top window of the Pentagon.
We thought we were done, but Colonel Corso said, got to tell you about Albuquerque.
Yes, Art, this concerns you.
Me? Okay.
I went in the bookstore, and there were 300 people there. And they set up a microphone. I had to talk to them. And at least a dozen women came up to me and said they'd heard your show. And they said, and Art, well, he sounded happy, real happy and pleased. I told him, well, I'm going to let him know that. And then an elder woman came up to me. She was not in the line. And she had heard your show. And she said she was in her sick bed. and got up out of her sick bed to come over and shake hands with me. And when she told me she got out of sick bed, she was leaning over and I was sitting down, and I reached up and hugged her. And she kissed me in the cheek and started to cry. So I figured it was all worthwhile right there.
Colonel, I understand.
And she heard your show, too. And they praised you, Art, so I want you to know that.
Colonel,
I opened at Albuquerque at the bookstore.
Well, thank you. Where do you go from here?
I'm going home tomorrow.
Going home,
sit in my easy chair for a while.
Well, it's an incredible thing that you have done, sir, for us, for our country, for the history books. And I personally want to thank you.
Well, thanks, and I think we're all part of it, so are you, Art. And I hope it works out, and I hope we keep making improvements and stay the great country. Some of the things we did there I haven't told you about that should be done that they stopped us from doing. And sometime we'll talk about those, too.
All right, Colonel.
Yes. Well, thank you, Art.
Thank you so much, and Dr. Alexander, thank you.
Okay, good night now.
Good night. Good night, gentlemen. There you have it, and I'm going to leave it up to you, ladies and gentlemen, to digest what you have just heard. Colonel Corso is an 82-year-old man. We have confirmed, Dr. Alexander has confirmed, and believe me, he has the resources to do that, that the colonel was exactly where he said he was, in the position he said he was in. And you've heard his story. What do you think? It's very hard to turn to anything that would seem more urgent, more important, of greater gravity than what you just heard. And what you just heard, if you listened carefully, was an honorable, simple man who acquired and worked with alien artifacts, saw himself alien bodies, and is saying exactly, in my opinion, what he believes to be true. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Tonight's show should be repeated, no question. It needed to be heard.
Well, look, as I just said, after the gentleman probably went and hit the pillow, when you heard all of this, how do you react? I mean, do you believe what you heard?
Oh, I definitely do. I feel emotional. I don't know which emotions they are. I don't know if I'm, how do you react to something like this?
I don't know.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much for the call. Yeah, maybe it's not fair that I ask you to react, because I'm not sure how to react myself. What we were just told is that a very great deal of what we utilize now, our current technology, computer technology, fiber optics, night vision, and certain fabrics, much of our current technology has been derived not through our own specific ingenuity, although I suppose you can give credit where credit is due. They had to figure out what they had in their hands, but this technology came from elsewhere. And you've got to kind of let that settle in on you a little bit before you can react. So maybe I'm asking for reaction too quickly. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
This is Jack from Seattle. I'll turn my radio.
Okay, Jack. Thank you. That's important to do. Have it close by, folks, so you can just turn that sucker off. Otherwise, it's very confusing.
Yes.
All right, my friend.
Well, I was enjoying your show. I didn't get a chance to hear it all. But I think you had an actual eyewitness to what took place.
Well, we had more than that. We had, yes, an eyewitness, of course. But beyond that, we have a man who was in position to go to various industries with this technology, give it to them, and give them budgets at the same time to develop it. I mean, you've either got to accept, I guess, what he said and sit back and imagine the implications of it all, or figure it's a lie. And I don't think it's a lie.
Well, I don't think it was either. I mean, a man of 82 years old, I wouldn't, a person wouldn't think that he would be motivated to lie.
No.
And you know, I'm a little nervous, so you'll have to forgive me.
That's quite all right. No, listen, in a way I am too, because I don't know how to react to this. On the one hand, if you believe it, it changes everything that we thought we knew.
Well, yes, it does.
Or else you've got to believe that it's a total fabrication, and I don't believe that.
And the question becomes, why would we have been kept in the dark? See, I lived not too far from Roswell as a kid, as a young kid.
Yes, sir.
A little town in West Texas, which is, I think it's 100 miles from Roswell. And during that period of time when this took place, there was a number of reports after the Roswell incident where people were finding these balloons, these weather balloons in their fields. And
that's right.
And everybody, you know, because of the report in the paper, assumed that these were experimental balloons that they had let go somewhere, you know, the government. But I, in retrospect, I think what they had done is after they put up that story about it being a weather balloon, that they released a number of these things so that people would actually see them. Because I saw one of them myself as a seven-year-old, and you know, it was just a big weather balloon that kind of deflated and came down into the field.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. And I guess you can look at it that way. In other words, you're suggesting that after the initial incident, they began launching balloons on a regular basis as a cover. That can be imagined. But again, after listening to Colonel Corso, and by the way, I have a great deal of respect for Dr. Alexander, who has done a very careful investigation of the colonel's background. You've got to come to one of two conclusions. Either you have just heard information that completely changes and rewrites history and what we know of ourselves and our technology and our advancements and our current state of advancement and perhaps what we're even doing now with regard to miniaturization, nanotechnology and all the rest of it, still being fed from elsewhere. You either believe that and believe the colonel and his story, or I suppose you could believe he's crazy. Dr. Alexander suggests that has already been looked at and is certainly not the case, nor does he sound that way. He sounds like a simple, honest, old soldier who's a patriot and who is telling us the truth. And if he is, then everything we believe is all wrong. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello there, Art. Good morning.
It's Fritz in Phoenix.
How can anybody go to sleep after this session? It's unbelievable. I'm so hyper I can't go to sleep. Anyhow, one thing is for sure, Art. The Defense Intelligence Agency and the national security agencies have been listening tonight.
I'm sure.
And the cat is out of the bag. I mean, the ins and outs of our intelligence system and the gravity of information that's just coming through, I mean, it's the truth. There's no other way, like you said, history in the making.
You've got to believe one thing or the other, Fritz. Either he's telling the truth, and I believe him to be.
And Art, you're part of history because this is going down, and someday people will look back and listen to the programs and say how hard we had to fight to get the information out.